are swift, rocks are ancient, mountains are high, oceans gray.
Welcome to The Inner Game. I'm your host, Gwen Garcelon. Thanks for listening. The Inner Game is about how we nurture and attend to our mind, body, spirit health, and how that allows us to make a bigger contribution in the area of purpose that calls to us. Because these are times that are asking us to evolve beyond the systems and paradigms that are collapsing. And these are conversations with people who are committed to making an evolutionary difference with their lives from a place of balance and love and service. My guest today is author Tim Weed. He's a two-time winner of the Writer's Digest Annual Fiction Award. And his past novel, The Afterlife Project, was a finalist for the PRISM Prize in Climate Fiction and selected as the best book of the year by the Library Journal and Toronto Star. And Tim was on the show last summer talking about this book, The Afterlife, and now he's got a new book coming out. The Gatepost is coming out in May. And so excited to get a chance to talk with you again, Tim.
I'm excited, too. It's really great to be back. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. You know, since my own work is in the field of how do we rebuild a regenerative relationship with the natural world and function as a human species in the face of collapse of the unsustainable culture and systems we've built. You know, Tim's books are really fascinating to me because they weave in all of these pieces and are just really exciting, fun stories and love stories. And I just kind of wonder, you know, where you are these days, Tim, in your feeling about how things may unfold on the planet and how they are unfolding. Kind of where's your heart at these days?
Well, I mean, I obviously we are in a time of great crisis, it's kind of in some ways it's a difficult time to be alive. In other ways, it's an interesting time to be alive. But we are at the beginning of the sixth mass extinction that this planet has experienced in its 4.5 billion year history, and we are also, as we know, we're sort of in a difficult political situation. And yet, despite all that, I do have a sense of optimism going forward. I think that we may be at a bit of an inflection point where we may be seeing those paradigms that you mentioned shifting to something better. And I think we it's necessary that we do see that in order to have a future as a species.
And what are the things that you point to or that you notice or that... I'd have you feel that way.
Well, you know, I've always been an environmentalist, I guess you would say. For a long time, I've been concerned about climate change and also very much concerned about the biodiversity crisis, the loss of biodiversity that we're facing and the loss of habitat and things like that. And then, of course, all you have to do these days is turn on the news, and it's just a difficult time. Lots of things seem to be coming to a head at this moment. And it is, you know, if you can get through any given day not feeling worried, then that's a credit to you.
Yeah.
So I think it's sort of this confluence of events that we're in right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think my question was more so what gives you, you know, the feeling that we're at an inflection point that may bring something positive or new or evolutionary, because yeah, it's absolutely clear that we're not in a good place, and there's not a lot to hope for.
Right. Well, but in terms of the hopefulness, I mean, I think coming from a lot of different quarters, I see kind of a shift in consciousness. I feel like there are a lot of people out there like us that are thinking about these kinds of things. And you see it online, you see it in interactions in the community. I mean, you know, it's really wonderful to go out to any kind of community event and feel the kind of solidarity that people just feel in this, you know, in this moment, being together and thinking about the future and thinking about how things could be. And so I feel like we're sort of, I don't know, I mean, I'm a bit of an intuitive person, and I sort of feel like we're at the beginning of a big shift of, you know, consciousness, a paradigm shift. At least that's what I hope.
Yeah, I feel that too. I really do.
Yeah.
You know, I've been, you know, a meditator and doing a lot of inner work for a long, long time in my life. And I don't know why, maybe it's the spring, or maybe it's just, you know, as you say, this sort of time on the planet. I'm feeling really uplifted lately, really happy, really full. And maybe that's because I'm doing what is my service to be doing.
Yeah.
I'm kind of in the flow of my soul purpose. And I think that's something that always, if you're doing that, you're good, because that's what you can control, and you can't control the other stuff.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if it feels that way, if you've sort of found your flow with the kind of books that you're writing these days.
Yeah, I think so. So, you know, I feel like everyone, we can have an influence on the world. I think it's a mistake to think we can sort of, something that we do, that one person does, is going to change the world. Maybe in some cases, but for most of us, we have a kind of limited sphere. And the sphere that I'm working with are the people who read my books. And the reason that I feel optimistic and hopeful is I feel like that we are kind of in need of a new mythology. One of the things that's going to help us sort of, adopt a new paradigm, a new way of being as a species going forward, is storytelling and mythology. And I feel like there are a lot of books out there that are sort of helping to weave this new tapestry of a new mythology that puts human beings, that to me anyway, shows human beings kind of fulfilling their destiny, or at least moving toward fulfilling their, what I see as the destiny of humanity. What I see as the destiny of humanity is to become creatures that realize that we're part of nature, that we're not standing above nature or apart from it, that we are part of nature, and that we, our destiny as a human species, is to become the stewards of nature rather than exploiters of it. I think that sort of, if I had to identify sort of one theme that's sort of behind, my novels and short stories, I guess that would probably be it. And I do feel part of a larger project, sort of weaving a new mythology that will prepare us in some ways for the future.
And it's funny because when you look at the arc of human, you know, life and development on the planet, it's been a very, very, very blip in recent history that we haven't had that mythology, that we are a part of nature. That has always been so central to humanity, is that we exist just as all of the other creatures and life forms and rocks and trees, and it's just this really short time that we've veered so far away from that mythology and are in this sort of virtual virtual kind of place that's not helping us to keep things going here in a healthy way.
Yeah.
What are
we become separated from nature.
Yeah.
I agree.
It's so insulated.
It's really true that we're part of it, you know.
Yep.
That we have been given birth by this you know, the planetary nature that we live in. So we're part and parcel of it. And to think of ourselves as being sort of the superior species that's separate, that is, I agree, it's kind of a recent thing in terms of, you know, world history.
And yet so incredibly impactful and devastating in such a short period of time.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, when you look at the
absolutely
impacts.
Although I do also take, I take some solace also from just a perspective on geological history. The idea that the Earth, the planet, this planet is 4.5 billion years old, and I can't even imagine a million years, like physically in my body. What does a million years even look like? But we're talking about 4.5 billion years. It's an unimaginable period of time. And in that period of time, there have been five mass extinctions when most of the planetary life has been wiped out, and then it always comes back. And so I take a certain amount of solace from that long perspective. Mm-hmm. And humanity in that scheme is you know, such a recent, it's just a blink of an eye that we've been on this planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting to see what has developed lately in terms of the interest. I mean, well, there's been interest in extraterrestrial life and aliens for quite a few decades now. But lately, it feels like there's more of an immediacy to it. You know, Steven Spielberg has a new movie coming out about extraterrestrial life. And I wonder if that, or just how you're feeling about that and how it relates to some of the themes from The Gatepost.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm agnostic on that whole topic. I mean, if you think about the statistically, I mean, you look just in terms of numbers, of course there's extraterrestrial life. You know, also just the way that we're finding new life on Earth. I mean, we're finding life a mile beneath the surface of the Earth in rocks. And so if life can exist there, it should be able to exist everywhere, I would think. But in terms of, you know, the whole sightings of extraterrestrials and all that's happening, with the U.S. government releasing files and stuff like that, I don't really know. But I would say that maybe it's symptomatic of this idea that we do all have this interest or this craving for connection, for understanding that we're part of something larger. So, yeah, but I don't know. It's certainly interesting in terms of seeing all these things come out.
Yeah. I want to share a line from The Gatepost, but I first want to say, just for those of you who may be just tuning in, this is Gwen Garcelon, and you're listening to The Inner Game on KDNK. My guest today is author Tim Weed, whose new book, The Gatepost, is a really moving novel about human development and love and what may be possible in other realms of consciousness. And this is a line that I really loved, because at the very end, you know, they were talking a little bit about extraterrestrial intelligence, and here the dad of the main character says, "Fortunately for us, life on this planet is miraculous enough. We don't need aliens to give us a sense of wonder. We just need to look more closely at the strange and beautiful beings all around us and express our gratitude for being alive at this moment and in this particular corner of the universe." It just touched me so much, because I do feel so grateful to live in the corner of the universe where I do live. And I'm actually reading a book right now called Awe, which is research into awe and its impact on us. And it's just, your books give me that.
Well, thank you. That's a wonderful compliment. I would point out that in that scene, when one of the characters is having that memory, right after that, she sees a vermilion flycatcher, which is a wonderful, very, very bright bird. It's almost unbelievable if you see it, how bright and how brilliant it is. And it does make me think about how absolutely amazing life on this planet it really is. If we just take time to notice it.
Yeah. Yeah, I always like to ask people a little bit about their own practices, because that's what this is about, you know, how we take care of ourselves right now to help us to see possibility and serve in ways that are meaningful right now on the planet and keep ourselves regulated. And I wonder what that looks like for you.
Well, I try to spend, well, I don't try, it sort of naturally happens, but I spend a good part of most days of the week out in the forest. I live, I'm from Colorado, but I actually live in Vermont now, which is similar to Colorado and has a wonderful environment. The nature is just fantastic and a really renewing force. So I do spend time, there's a particular mountaintop I go to that has a wide view of kind of an unspoiled stretch of the Green Mountains, and There's also a little river that I go to where I sometimes plunge in the cold water and sit in the cold water for a while and sort of meditate. Or sometimes I'll just sit on the bank and meditate on a waterfall. And what I try to do is I have certain spirits that I have become familiar with over the years. I've spent a lot of time in Cuba and have interacted with Santeria priests and priestesses, what they're called santeros and santeras. And also in Mexico, I've interacted with curanderas. And I've sort of, you know, through this, I've, you know, tried to get more in touch with my own kind of guardian spirits. And that's what I do when I go out and meditate. And it is an incredibly calming thing. And it helps me renew me and sends me back into the writing studio with renewed energy. And you know, I highly recommend spending at least a couple hours in nature every day if you can, if you're lucky enough. I'm very lucky that I can do that.
Yeah, I feel very lucky that way as well. And I do make it a priority. Yeah. Because I feel like it's our natural state. You know, it's unnatural to spend all of our days inside sitting in front of a computer. That's not natural for human beings. Yeah. And we're seeing that, you know, with all of the degenerative disease that we face these days. It's no mystery because our lifestyles have become so unnatural. And I feel like it's really important for us, almost as an act of resistance to this craziness that we're in the midst of, to have that time to spend in a more natural state. And you feel so instantly what that does for your nervous system, you know, just to relax and regulate and be able to have original thought, which is really important.
And even walking too, just walking is sort of being in that rhythm, or walking or sometimes skiing. I do a lot of cross country skiing in the winter, and just sort of being in that rhythm in a place where you're surrounded by trees or nature. It's just incredibly, it's so valuable. And turning your phone off and just going.
Yeah. You mentioned Michael Pollan's new book. And I wonder if you could say something about that, because I think he touches on all of this as well.
Yeah, so that book was really inspiring to me. And actually, a lot of the research for The Gatepost was about the use of what we call hallucinogenic substances, or what you might call entheogenic substances, like psilocybin and ayahuasca and others. And Michael Pollan talks about a default mode network, which is what we have evolved as human beings. It's our kind of our consciousness that we've evolved as human beings in order to survive in the world. And what it means is that we actually see the world through kind of a narrow slit of what's important, what do we need, what do we have to do, what's the next thing on the list. And that what these entheogenic substances will do is kind of open up that slit. It basically takes you from seeing the world through a really narrow perspective to seeing it in a much broader perspective. And actually, you know, to understand the truth. And, you know, we were talking before about how it's been such a brief period of time that humanity has felt itself to be separate and superior to nature. I would say that the truth is that we know at a deep level that we're actually part of nature. And so when you have this experience, I think with an entheogenic or hallucinogenic substance, one of the things that happens if you do it with the right attitude is you basically just come to be confronted once again with this truth that we're part of everything, that we're not separate from anything. And that is it's been an incredibly important experience for me in my life. And it was also a very important part of writing The Gatepost. It was part of what I was writing about. The Gatepost actually does deal specifically with a series of experiences on psilocybin mushrooms. And that is something that is a huge part. We talked before that that's a huge part of the shamanic tradition of ancient Mesoamerica, where they're finding, artifacts that date back 10,000 years or you know, thousands of years at least that show people with mushrooms are in the process of having one of these experiences.
What do you feel like is the role of those hallucinatory states to our development as humans? What role maybe have they played?
It's really interesting.
You know?
Yeah, it's really interesting. There's a very interesting book, and I don't know if you've read it, Gwen. It's called The Immortality Key. It's kind of a weird title. But it's a book that basically traces early religion, and it talks about the Eleusinian mysteries from Greece, which was, basically people, for about 1,000 years, people would, every year, they would congregate at this one, the Temple of Eleusis, and they would train all year for this, and then they would enter the Temple of Eleusis, and they would be given a drink of something. And this drink would create this, the Eleusinian mystery of this experience that is now, it's actually been proven that that was actually what they were doing, was they were taking ergot, which is what LSD is derived from. So mm-hmm. It was this very, very important religious experience that was considered to be secret for and was kept secret for a long time, but it was hallucinogenic. And I think that is not unique to the Greeks. This book, The Immortality Key, talks about it was actually part of the genesis of early Christianity as well. Mm-hmm. But it was certainly part of the Mesoamerican tradition and the tradition of so many other civilizations around the world. So I would say it's been pretty essential, a pretty big part of human history and our development.
What do you think it can do for us right now? I mean, it's not lost on me that there's this sort of movement and opening toward decriminalizing, different substances. Yeah. And, they're much more available, and, there's therapy that's including them. And I'm wondering if you've had any insight into, what it is that is a possibility because of this new this reclaimed relationship.
Well, I think it sort of fits into what we've been talking about with this evolution of a new, we call it a new paradigm, or we return to the old paradigm, as you pointed out, of the fact that, that we're part of nature. I think it's really a tool, maybe a tool is a little bit of a utilitarian word. It's a sacred medicine.
An ally.
That can really facilitate.
Yeah.
It's an ally, right, that can really facilitate a kind of return to this paradigm, and in broader societal terms. But for individuals, I think it can really. I mean, there's been all kinds of studies about how it can really resolve things like depression, anxiety, all of these mental illnesses that are associated with this default mode network, where we're seeing life in too narrow of a sphere, and then you have one of these substances and you do it under the guidance of either a shaman or a really highly trained psychotherapist, and you can change your life. Like, doing it once can change your life and can sort of open you up to the truth. And the truth of existence, to me, is actually very heartening. It may be a little scary when you first confront it, but it's actually, wow, okay, I am part of everything. I am part of nature. I'm not alone. It helps you. These substances have been given to terminally ill patients and have changed their entire perspective and allowed them to approach the prospect of impending death with a sense of peace. So it's really quite amazing what it can do.
It's interesting.
In the right circumstance.
Right. It's interesting you say that, at the end of life and peace. And I remember my own near-death experience, and you hear this over and over again with near-death experiences, that they're so beautiful. People are sometimes on the fence about wanting to come back because it's, the sense of unity, consciousness is so immediate that, and that is such an incredibly beautiful thing. You realize that there's no way to be separate from anything. And in that death experience is the birth back into that unity consciousness where there's nothing separate. There's nowhere to fall away to. And that, maybe that's part of this, is that it's another way for us to actually taste the beauty of what it's like to be connected in unity consciousness, which we all have access to.
100%. I think it's 100%. But it's also, I think it's important to mention that if people are not comfortable taking hallucinogenic substances, you don't need those either. You can also get there through meditation and being in nature.
Right.
Going on a retreat, for example, in a beautiful natural spot, as you know very well, and that kind of thing can do the same thing for you.
Yes. Oh, such a good conversation. I love getting to check in with you, Tim.
Yeah,
thanks so much for this. And as Tim mentioned, if any of you listeners are interested in deepening your own relationship with sacred nature and the healing that is available when we're on the land, I'm hosting a retreat September 11th through the 14th here in the Aspen area, and you can find out more about that on my website, GwenGarcelon.com. That's GARCELON.com. Yeah, it's a special time that we don't often get to have space held for us to go deeper wherever we're starting from in that relationship with nature and how it affects our lives so importantly. And want to let you know also that Tim will be in the Colorado area in August. So check out his website, timweed.net, and find out the dates. He'll be in Crested Butte, August 8th. So that will be a great chance if you want to talk with him more about any of this. And until next time, you know, go ahead and read Tim's book, The Gatepost, and let it open yourself to all the possibilities for the future. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Clouds are swift. Rocks are ancient, mountains are high.